into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Well, suddenly Slovakia against the Republic of Ireland is upon us. There is much to discuss. We'll bring you some what Callum Robinson was saying and Matt Doherty as well. We have Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent with us. Dan, I will start by sending a note of optimism, if I may. Your colleague Aidan Fitzmaurice was talking to Lubo Moravcik about Slovakia, and we're always so focused on ourselves. So here's what Lubo thinks. Most of the Irish players play at a high level. They're either in the Premier League or they've played a lot there. So Ireland are the favourites. Slovakia have a problem in the squad. We've good players, but they don't play for their clubs. And he mentioned the likes of Hamzik is here, but we don't even know how his form is. We've too many players who are out of competition, out of form. We don't have players to replace them. It's a big problem for us. We have a small squad, some good quality, but when our best players are missing or are not match fit, we are weaker. You can't go from the bench at your club into a big playoff for the Euros. I see the Premier League. I know your players. They play a lot for their clubs, and it's an advantage for you. There we are. That's a note for optimism.
Well, you know, I always think with these big international games, we do have a tendency to, you know, in Ireland, to just obsess about the Irish team and sort of always assume that the opposition are sort of grand, you know, that everything, they should be as you were, you know, like as you would expect them to be. And I mean, that's maybe a defense mechanism in some way, you know, you sort of think that everything is bound to be rosy in their garden to some degree. Maybe that's just an impression I have that's not accurate, but there is no doubt that on form, and even just in terms of prep, as much as Ireland have lost Seamus Coleman, which is definitely a blow, I mean, it's well documented there's a replacement there, and that's been, you know, the biggest unrest. Okay, Harry Arter has been lost. Would he have started? It was probably borderline. Whereas what Slovakia have gone through is certainly a much more interrupted prep between losing Dubravka, as you mentioned there with Aidan Fitzmaurice's piece with Moravcik, you know, form issues around the number of players who haven't played. They've had this issue with trying to get the Lobotka in from quarantine in Italy. And, you know, the Hamzik, who is not undoubtedly their star man, yeah, he is coming from China. He couldn't play last month because of travel. He travelled early to get there, but as Moravcik said there, his form is something of a question mark. So, yeah, not everything is great at the Slovakia end of things, whereas and I think sometimes as well we will look at their players and where they are playing and speak about, well, they've got five Serie A players, but I think now there is a situation where some teams, you know, the equivalent sort of media forces will look at Ireland and go, they've got, I mean, they could. Connolly scored in the Premier League. McGoldrick scored last weekend. Robinson scoring in the Premier League, and you could definitely build Ireland up if you really wanted to. I mean, there's evidence there to do that if you really wanted to do so. As much as that is relevant to the game or not, you could certainly talk yourself into thinking that Ireland are going to be a very strong opponent.
This is the eve of a huge away match. Instead of being around Bratislava and talking to locals and having a drink and being a bit more in tune with the squad, you're in your living room, Dan. So there you are. It is quite a strange experience, I would think, for all concerned, those who usually go to the matches, be it fans, players' families, media as well. And I suspect you feel that bit more out of tune with things. Quite often, you know, the Zoom press conferences, you get your quotes, but it's the observations you can make off camera which tell you as much, if not more, sometimes.
Big time, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, maybe this is just a media thing to talk about, and you can debate the relevance of it. And it's people don't care about that sort of stuff. But generally, when you're over there and in and around the game, you know, you get chatting to locals. You know, maybe you pick up a bit more on the ground about the Slovakian team, or just a sense of a mood of the manager. And you know, the day before a big game, like, you'd always notice with Martin O'Neill, for example, you know, that this week, say, we would have spoken to Stephen Kenny on Sunday, and let's say the first day of the week, and always the managers the first day of the week are pretty relaxed and open, but then the day before the game, Martin O'Neill will be very intense. You know, different managers that have different attributes, and we're not really seeing that. I mean, like I said, last month's game in Sofia was the first Ireland game I hadn't been at in 14 years, home, away, friendly, competitive, whatever. So it is probably a bit disconcerting to not be there, and now it's almost becoming normal, which is bad. You know, you definitely do feel a bit more detached, you know, that you're sort of, and I appreciate that this is how a lot of people engage with games normally, so you just have to get on with it. But it is a different experience in terms of even just the build up, that there is a real sense of detachment. But I think even go you know, move away from any of that media stuff, even the players themselves, the routine they would normally have on international week, as far as I understand, like, they are very much in a bubble. Normally, if you're an Irish player coming home, you might have an afternoon off where, if I say an Irish sort of base, or you grew up in Ireland, like, the families might be able to come up to the hotel in the afternoon. You might see sort of parents or nephews or siblings or whoever it might be. You'd have issues around tickets and probably even at away games, you know, you'd see players on the day of the game, maybe on our staff going for a walk, going for a coffee, just being around the town, getting a flavour of the atmosphere and all of that. They can't leave their hotel now. They can't do any of that. So it's a different big game vibe. It's, I mean, closed doors is obviously just one aspect in the stadium, and I guess the players are all used to that. But sometimes, like these big international games, they do have their personality around it that are very much part of the experience of building it up. Whereas now this is all very internalized now, you know, that this is a massive game. I mean, it's pretty much obvious what the stakes of the game are, because there is a winner or loser tomorrow night. But that motivation has to come from within the group and an awareness. And anyone who got a buzz off, you know, getting the bus to the stadium and going through the crowds and seeing their family or whatever it is that it might be, it's going to be very different. But it's a strange one. I think it's a strange one for Stephen Kenny, because he probably had himself geared up for a certain scrutiny and spotlight, which of course is still there, but like, he still hasn't had that moment of walking out in front of the crowd in Dublin. He hasn't had that moment of seeing the famous Irish away support, you know, at a ground, and that goodwill and that. I mean, it's been obviously expressed, but the games themselves are just, it's a half-life really at the moment. And I mean, the feedback to whatever happens tomorrow won't be any less, more or less ferocious or friendly, depending on how things go. But I imagine it's a bit of an odd build-up compared to how they would have envisaged it being, for sure.
It's been very quiet, and in different circumstances, it would have been totally different. I don't just mean with crowds involved and media travelling, but even Stephen Kenny, you mentioned there, did a press conference via Zoom on the Sunday.
No, he did it in the flesh on Sunday.
He did the one in the flesh on Sunday.
But the other stuff has been Zoom.
Old Trafford and Aston Villa kicked off, and they dominated the news cycle, and then there was fun and games obviously between Neffet and the government. And really, it's kind of only in the last 24 hours we've got to digest, you know, all that, getting through all that and really focusing on this game. So if it had, for instance, been relatively quiet in the Neffet front and relatively quiet at Old Trafford and Villa Park, we would have been straight in on Monday into Ireland build up. It hasn't been that kind of vibe.
No, it hasn't, definitely not. Yeah, I think there's something in that. I think, you know, if it was a normal week, you'd probably have something going on every day, and you'd have people's dispatches from Bratislava or wherever it was, and maybe that would have added more to it. It's been very, yeah, you're right, it has been quiet. And listen, I mean, there's other stuff going on in people's lives at the moment, as you say, which is just affecting us, like, in everything that we do. And so it's only, like, perfectly natural that would be the case. And I mean, I've also made the point as well that, I mean, we are all sort of operating day to day at the moment, week to week, really. And all of a sudden, like this discussion about, well, Ireland have to qualify for this tournament because we want to host a major tournament on our own soil next summer and all of this. I mean, even that line of thinking, it's like, well, what really is the prize here? Do we even know what that is? And I don't know, is that sort of playing into people's minds? But generally, like, we have this excitement about what a major tournament brings. We don't know what a major tournament is going to be next year. Now, you know, we don't know what's going to come here, what will come here. And maybe that's a very deflating line of thought. People don't want that on a sports show, but I guess it's just it's a bit there, like it's hanging over there. You see now, and in some respects, like Slovakia Ireland is one of the lucky games, because I mean there has been COVID cases in both camps in terms of staff. And I think Slovakia, like again, and staff, they've had issues. But you see what's going on in Scotland today, where they're after losing three first choice players for the playoff that they have, you know, with Stuart Armstrong and then two close contacts, like three big players, Kieran Tierney, Ryan Christie, gone for this game, you know. And so how can you think that the result of the game and all of that is the be all and end all, where there's all these other factors at play, which are adding these crazy variables to it. I think that will go once we get to 7:45 tomorrow. And I think that more than any other game that Stephen Kenny's ever been involved in his life, I mean, the eyes of the nation will be on it. It's on RTE, you know, the games last month were Sky matches, and, you know, Nations League, you're still trying to remind people how important it is. And I think people's minds were elsewhere, I think, really, as well around that time. And I don't know, like, there was obviously big discussion around it, but I think this is obviously another level. And everything you say is correct, but I still think 7:45 tomorrow night, I think it's almost this great distraction that everyone is going to be tuned into.
Absolutely. And more importantly, there's live commentary and Off the Ball, Dan. Let's not forget that. Nathan
Murphy. I listen,
and
people
Stewie
are going to
be coming your way.
But it sounds of it, people are going to be in their cars at checkpoints anyway, in traffic. So you'll actually, you'll have a lot of people actually. That's where they're going to be. If you're in your checkpoint tomorrow, take in the game and Off the Ball, for sure.
Let's then, in the context of more important things going on, try and bring people inside the camp this week as much as we can. There's been the Finland and Bulgaria game. Since then, Nathan was part of the Callum Robinson press conference. I'm not sure if this was Zoom or in person, but he was asking Robinson how Stephen Kenny has communicated with the players since, or to what extent has he?
All the players we've spoken to over the last while talk about the amount of information. Has that kept going over the last few weeks? Has the manager been in touch when you've been back with your clubs?
Obviously he tries to get in touch, but it's tough for him because we're with our clubs and we're doing what we're doing week in, week out. So it's more when we get here where he can obviously get more information across as a collective instead of individuals, because it would be tough to be ringing every player throughout every week. It'd be tough to obviously get the information. So it's obviously easier when you've got the group of lads in front of you to help us. It's easier to get the information across.
I'm sure you'd say you'd play anywhere, but if it is the 4-3-3 formation, again, across that front three, what do you think is your best position? What's your preferred spot?
Obviously, I've played in every one of them positions in my career so far. So I had, obviously, for Preston North End, I played a lot on the left. And then for Ireland, I've played a lot on the right. And then obviously this season, West Brom last season, I was on the left and right. And then this season, I've been playing through the middle for the first four games of the season. So that's the obviously good thing about myself. I enjoy playing in any of them positions, and I enjoy just being in the final third and trying to be a threat from any right, left or up front. So it's been, obviously, it's good for me because it helps me get into the squads, and hopefully I can, as I say, push for that starting spot.
He's probably vying with Callum O'Dada, who, by the way, Dan, did say of the flow of information, the attention to detail is something I've really noticed, probably the best that I've worked under so far in terms of that aspect. I haven't actually been in a setup like this. It's everything, whether it be analysis meetings to physical workout, gym loading meetings, etc. It's all there. So that's obviously a seal of approval from Callum O'Dowda. I'll get your thoughts on Robinson and O'Dowda. That's probably one of the trickier decisions for Stephen Kenny to have to make.
So.
So here's Stephanie Roach. She was talking to Enda yesterday on the show, and he was asking her about how she sees the front three for Ireland.
I think you've got to look at the form of players. I think obviously McGoldrick didn't start against Finland. You had Adam Ida who came in and started up front, but I think McGoldrick obviously got player of the year last year. He was probably one of our best players and was very good in a couple of the games, but again it was just kind of getting those few games under his belt. I think having Aaron Connolly outside him, I think at times McGoldrick likes to kind of go wandering to get the ball, but I think he's at his best when he's in the box. We have players like Aaron Connolly and maybe Callum O'Dowd as well started out right against Finland. There's a lot of choice out there to play, but my preference would probably be McGoldrick up front. I think he kind of proven himself in the last few games before all the kind of COVID hit. I think he just seems to have that little bit of quality, and as you mentioned, he's scoring goals as well. But Aaron Connolly out left as well, I think, needs to start. I think he's starting in a Brighton team who are playing really good football at the minute as well, so I think he's a player who I'd like to see play too.
Having played up front yourself and sort of as a forward player, Aaron Connolly, he plays centrally for Brighton during the year most of the time, or at least he definitely veers in there quite a lot. He's been starting under Stephen Kenny as sort of the left winger or the left wing forward. Can you explain to us what the difference is there in that position and how difficult it is for a forward to actually cut in inside and get inside his man and get into the box like Aaron Connolly wants to do?
I think for Aaron Connolly, he's quite dynamic. I think he's pacey, he's quick, and if you look at the players that kind of have been playing out there, that's kind of the attributes they need to have. I think he probably prefers to play through the centre. He prefers to maybe getting in on goal a little bit rather than running down the line for balls to cross in or maybe cutting in to shoot. But I think when you look at the players that are playing there, I think McGoldrick is probably the one who I would play up through the centre, as I wouldn't kind of put him wide. And I think what Kenny is trying to do is he's trying to fit his best players on the pitch, and I think Aaron Connolly is one of the best forward players. So if he has to play out left, I'm sure he'll be happy just to be playing in the game. But I do think that as a centre forward, and you're used to playing in the centre forward position, you kind of just have to adjust your game a little bit. But I think the way Aaron Connolly plays, he wants to get the ball down, he wants to run with it, and he wants to get at players. And I think he can do that as well from out wide as he will in centre as well. So I don't think it will be an issue for him playing out left. I think he'll relish a chance to get on the ball and get at players. And as you say, he can cut inside and get shots off. He has the ability to play little tread through balls. True balls through to kind of the likes of McGoldrick and whoever might be playing on the right hand side or midfield following up the play. So I think playing out left won't be a problem to him. I think, as I said, Kenny will just be trying to fit his best players into the system that he wants to play.
Stephanie Roach there talking to Enda yesterday. Dave McGoldrick, Dan McDonald is absolutely one of those players. Kenny was talking about him in the last couple of days, and he was making the point that he's 33 or nearly 33 now, has a decent sized family, said Kenny. You did wonder whether a player would say, I've got to focus on my club career. We've been very dependent on him. In the last campaign when he was missing, we lost. Talked about how adaptable he is, how he can link up the play, knits it together, can play with his back to goal. He is a focal point. On the Robinson O'Dowda situation, you suspect we'll see the other off the bench, whichever choice he makes. So it doesn't feel like Coleman versus Doherty type scenario here.
No, well, he can make five subs in this game as well, which is worth pointing out. It was only three last month, but UEFA have changed the rules since then. You have the opportunity. So I think, as you say, with some of those attacking decisions, it's not that it simplifies it, but it sort of gives you the opportunity probably to think about sort of a 90-minute strategy. I mean, given the Irish propensity for draws, a 120-minute scenario isn't really out of the equation. So there is the option there. Yeah, with all these equations that you have, that there's every good chance that these are going to be involved anyway, be it, you know, Robbie Brady or Conor Heron in midfield, or, you know, Robinson O'Dowda. I think James McLean would be surprised if he wasn't on the pitch at some stage, albeit you'd think Connolly might be ahead of him. Ida, if he doesn't start, which I don't think he will, I think McGoldrick will, there's every chance that Ida's there if you're in bother, although Shane Long comes into it. Jack Byrne, even as if with a five subs situation, maybe comes into it, whereas I don't think he would with three. So these are the options that you have there. I mean, I think the McGoldrick one is so significant for the style of the team. Because I really don't think that role for Aaron Connolly on the left is where he's going to end up. I don't think Stephen Kenny thinks he's going to end up there. It's more needs must. And it's, you can talk about what Aaron Connolly offers in a forward sense of the word, an attacking sense of the word. And it's a very positive move. But I do feel like, in a way, that defensively on that side is a slight concern. But that's like a very positive move to go with Connolly. And this is the whole point of like trying to take the initiative and take the game to the opposition, that you don't start making decisions on the basis of, well, what happens if that doesn't happen, you know? And but there's a balancing act. And if you do go with, say, Connolly, McGoldrick and Robinson, you've gone with three strikers who are all playing centrally for their clubs this year. And that obviously puts a real onus on what's behind you there to give the platform for that front three, and also to those players. I mean, McGoldrick does wander, as Stephanie Roach at the point. And I think in a way you could see the attraction of McGoldrick as sort of being a number nine who actually comes back to help out and maybe create opportunities that Ireland didn't have last month. Like, Bulgaria defended so deep that I think the if you have pace on the wings, which is what Kenny wants, you sort of need the full backs to be on the opposite side to actually leave space in behind that you can exploit. And he has spoken about how the Slovakian full backs are quite attacking. So maybe it's that David McGoldrick coming back is actually part of getting involved in the play and releasing Connolly and maybe O'Dowda or Robinson. And that's where Ireland actually have some joy, because in Bulgaria at times it was just very slow. But a part of that is because the game was all ahead of them, because Bulgaria were sort of happy to sit in. Whereas Kenny, the way he's talking, and of course there could always be a tactical sort of something pulled out of the hat from someone here, Kenny seems to think that Slovakia are going to try and dominate the game too, and that it could make it more open than you might think as a consequence, because both teams will have an intent to attack with their full backs. But that obviously means if you can transition, as they say now, very quickly, you've got a chance.
You were writing about James McCarthy in the Irish Independent today, and much tomorrow will hinge on how well he plays. And you were harking back to teenager at Hamilton. You know, he's had a long career, James McCarthy, and he's 30 next month. It's an interesting milestone to assess where he is. 260 Premier League games, which puts him 20th on the all-time list of top flight appearances. So we're not just talking Premier League era. Only Coleman and Long of the current team are ahead of him. So on paper, it's been an amazingly successful career. And yet, as you point out, many remain unconvinced. And has there been a standout McCarthy performance in an Irish jersey, or certainly a succession of them? Probably not really. There is a now or never element to McCarthy in an Irish green jersey at 30.
There is. I must say that is a Premier League list, but he is going to hop up that appearance list, because most of the ones within the 100 ahead of him are retired. Like, he's probably even going to overtake, I think he's going to overtake Kilbane if he plays a couple more seasons. And we know what a great sort of longevity of his career, which just shows you how long McCarthy has been playing and how many times he's been picked at Premier League level. But we haven't necessarily always seen that with Ireland. Although, again, I think with most managers, like, he's always been a first choice for them when he's been here. It's just a case that he hasn't always been here. And he's basically lost 3 years out of his career and still has a really impressive record appearance-wise, which shows, like, the way he's regarded. But, yeah, there is an element of now and ever about it. I also think as well, I'm certainly trying to make the point in the piece, that he has, I think he's in danger of becoming a bit of a whipping boy figure as well too. And I think it's easier for him to be that way, in my mind anyway, because people don't know very much about him. He's not someone who's out there doing press and it's like, oh, you know, look at him there. He's a real upbeat sort of, this locally produced player that we see and encounter all the time. I think sometimes, because he keeps himself to himself to some degree, it's like, he's over there. He hasn't played that much. Is he that invested in this? When actually, the track record of his career, the amount of times I've spoken to people, he comes over when he's been injured. Even when he was injured, he always, you know, a couple of times he'd come over when he was never going to be fit to play. And he did declare for Ireland when others have walked away, and he stuck with it.
Who walked away? Name names.
But, like, you know, the point is that there's a tone of criticism sometimes, which I think it's a bit like, it can be a bit OTT. But at the same time, like, as I said, he hasn't had that run of, as you said there, that run of like real commanding. Do you remember that game where he was brilliant in that game? Now, I also think that part of his style is such that I'm not sure he's ever going to be to the forefront of like a winning performance in like some landmark sort of tackle or dominant moment. It's more about like work that teammates appreciate. But if I'm talking to people who've played with him, it's ground he covers, he'll break up the play, he'll be efficient. Now, Kenny has always spoken about there would be more in him, probably in terms of his passing and like his role on the side is interesting. If Kenny plays the same system that he did in Sofia, which is possible, you would think, like, he's a big link between that defense and the midfield. Like, he is, like, a lot hinges on his ability not just to cover ground and do the defensive work against, like, what would be a strong Slovakian midfield three if they're full strength, but it's also about, like, you know, the tempo and the passing and getting the sort of, you know, getting the play moving from deep, almost being that sort of, you know, quarterback or sort of that type of player who's really controlling things from that area. And it's a big responsibility for him.
That's the key point. And maybe unfortunately for him, and we've all had spells, I suspect, in a game where we just decide to watch McCarthy closely for a few minutes and see what he's doing. And there are times where he doesn't look to be demanding the ball enough or really saying, I'm going to dictate things here, take it off the back four, go from there. And so we are now under absolutely no illusions that that is what his manager wants him to do. So if he doesn't start doing it pretty soon, then you've got to think, is it in him? You know, like, I think John Giles definitely expressed reservations over that aspect. Is he really looking for the ball the way he needs to be? Demanding it is the word, as opposed to being, you know, not philosophically opposed to receiving it.
Yeah, I think the question mark is if that role really, really suits his style. Like, does that, is that really what's best for him? But he's probably still Ireland's best defensive midfielder, you know, of the options that are there. But the argument is, does he need someone in next to him? Mm. And that it's more of like a 4-2-3-1, you know, that there's actually two in there and that McCarthy keeps doing what he does, which is sort of unsettling opponents. We've seen him against Manchester United recently in games where he's been good, but he hasn't. I think that was it James McArthur, his pal, that was in with him in that game. And the argument is, do you need someone in with him in that area, and then you have a more creative player ahead.
You used the phrase, and this is a very nuanced piece on McCarthy, by the way. Since I would say it's very fair to him and also realistic, but you used the phrase at one stage, unrealistic expectations when it comes to him at times, and we do pitch him as the metronomic passing midfielder who can make Ireland tick, and maybe we don't actually see him do that enough at club to justify those expectations.
Yeah, I think it's part of it. Now, like, then again, you speak to people who've played with him, and they will say, no, like, he's good on the ball, he can do it, but maybe just not, like, not in the sense that, like, he completely dominates a game in that area. Like, and we know that the intent is there to play and try and control the game. But we know that there's going to be spells in this game where Ireland are sort of not overrun, but that Slovakia will have spells, you would assume, because they've good midfield players. And even against Wales last year, when they were at full strength, and we know that Wales are a decent possession side. Like, Slovakia dominated possession against Wales. So, I mean, they generally are good at keeping hold of it when they're in play. And this is where some of McCarthy's better attributes are going to be important. Like, if Ireland want Matt Doherty and Enda Stevens to get forward and get across the halfway line, you know, and really impose, there is an element of, like, that defensive midfield player needs to be covering space in behind them. Like, and we saw that even with the Bulgaria goal last month, that he was just, like, there was that space between Doherty and Duffy, but McCarthy was maybe just a bit slow getting back as well. So, like, it's a big responsibility for him. And that's why just the shape of the midfield is interesting, what he does, because you have Hendrick and you have Conor Hourihan, and I think they're probably the two to play with him. I think Malumbi, I think it'll probably be too soon. I think the other one that's a contender definitely is Brady. But then, like, is Brady someone that you actually, you mix it up a small bit, and Brady's more of a number 10-ish, or he's ahead of McCarthy and someone, McCarthy and Hendrick, say. Like, that's the thing. We can talk about, like, how Irish players have done for their clubs this season, and it's great. Like, it's really positive how they've done. But they all probably have that type of midfield controlling player at their clubs that Ireland may not necessarily have. So it's not as easy for them to showcase those attributes that they've shown, because they're part of a different system at their club. And it is just the one area of the pitch where you're hoping that someone can really step on. And it's a collective effort. I mean, it is a collective effort. And I think the ideal scenario is that McCarthy is doing all that work and covering ground. But then you have a situation where, like, say, Hourihan or Hendrick, they're also coming becoming involved and setting the wheels in motion for sort of good positive attack and play as well. But there's no doubt McCarthy is very, very important to how things are going to work.
Dan McDonald, stay with us. A few bits to get to. Matt Doherty's been talking today about a few different things.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now, you're welcome back. We are building up, myself and Dan McDonald, to Republic of Ireland away to Slovakia tomorrow. Live commentary here on Off the Ball. Matt Doherty's been speaking to the press this afternoon, a few different things. First of all, if you can't ask Matt Doherty about Seamus Coleman, what can you ask him about?
When I played, he's fully supportive. When he plays, I'm fully supportive. We understand the situation, that there's two of us in that happen to be playing most of the time at big clubs and playing well. So there's no like animosity between us at all. We're quite good friends. Although he didn't answer my call last night, so I don't know what that was about. But look, other than that, we're pretty close, and like he'll be texting me probably later on saying all the best tomorrow. So the relationship is very healthy.
Well, that's rubbish, Dan. Where's the beef? We need the beef here.
You had scoops on this show before about their friendship, didn't you? In cars, taking phone calls together and stuff like that from Stephen Hunt, wasn't it? So.
Yeah.
And they are, there doesn't appear to be that simmering rivalry there that you want.
No, it's good. Mature, good, and they're two very solid fellas. Here's more importantly, so this is just, and Kevin Kilbane was making this point last night, and maybe we underestimate it, just how nervy this is going to be for the players. The stakes are incredibly high. It's defining for lots of them. You know, be massively important for Stephen Kenny's tenure if he can get through here. So just the nerves of this occasion, and Matt Doherty was asked about dealing with all that.
Worst case scenario, we're all down. It's not the end of the world. It's a 90-minute game, which is a long time. So, look, I think there's enough of us in the squad, and whoever plays will have enough experience about them to not kind of panic. I mean, none of us would panic at club level if we were 1-0 down. All of us would be saying to each other, "Let's stay in the game. Let's stay in the game and see what happens." So. I don't think anybody would be panicking if that is the case. Hopefully it's not, but if that something like that does happen, I don't think there'll be panic buttons getting pushed around anywhere. So we know that we have the quality and ability when everybody's confident to go and create and score goals.
So that's Matt Doherty. He's come across very well in the last couple of weeks and done different bits and bobs for Spurs. He was also asked about this equal pay story, which has arisen again, Dan. The Times of Ireland reported this morning that the government now are set to meet with the FAI to request that the Irish senior women's team are paid the same as Stephen Kenny's side. So it's understood the Irish men's team receive €2,500 as a basic appearance fee before any extras such as win bonus come in, whereas the women's team are on €500, just 20% of what the men are getting. So Jack Chambers, the junior sports minister, Fianna Fáil TD, has come out and said that the minister and I will be engaging with the FAI and the 20 by 20 campaign to ensure this is addressed. And so you suspect it will be addressed very quickly. Brazil made this change in August. The English FA have done likewise. Norway have done it. New Zealand have done it. This is coming, and you fully suspect this will get done quite quickly now.
I would have thought so, yeah. It's something that Noel Mooney, actually, when he was at the FAI, would have spoken about last November. He gave his reporter at the time that there was something they were looking at. My understanding at that time is that it was sort of tied in with, I think, you know, sort of sponsors were looking at it, title sponsors were looking at it. Of course, three now are leaving, and the FAI need to find a new sponsor, and the FAI have their own financial issues, etc. But, I don't think there's any reason why it shouldn't happen. You know, we've come from a strange place where, women's players were changing out of tracksuits in the airport a couple of years ago because things were that bad, and there was an unhappiness even at the fact that the PFAI were representing them. And it must be stressed as well that there was like people involved in women's football in the FAI who didn't even defend them at that stage. It was a strange old time. But I think now there's no reason why it shouldn't happen. I think the money that's paid to the men's team pretty much wouldn't be meaning a huge amount to them in their lives, where the reality is that you have members of the women's team still a lot of them are now gone professional and have gone to England, but I mean, there would have been times and still would be players who were sort of taking time off work and getting a per diem, you know, to reflect that. So, and it may well be that the men's fees have to come down to, you know, financially to find the sort of the parity or the halfway house or whatever it might be. But I don't think anyone's really going to have any objection to it. I wouldn't have thought.
I'm not sure he was banking on the question, but Matt Doherty was asked about it as well this afternoon. Have a listen.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't really read any of that stuff. Can't really give you a proper answer on it. I would like to be a bit more educated on it and look into it a bit more and give you a real more in-depth answer. But I guess I don't see why not. It's like you're playing for a country, I guess. Like we're not breaking the bank with fees and stuff like that. So I guess why not? Sorry, I think you more.
I think even his instinctive top of the head response is pretty much, you know, about right as well. It's almost that simple a scenario. So that
I feel for him there. Sort of,
sure, it's, you know, difficult. Yeah.
It's just like he's a pretty honest guy, but it's the day before Euro 2020 playoff game. So, you know, I doubt he was expecting that one, as I say. So
no. We've, about 3 minutes on the clock here. So final thoughts tomorrow then. The importance of this doesn't need stating again for Stephen Kenny. I mean, if it was to go badly awry, then it really casts a mood over the whole thing, and you've got other games to come. But you know, you're looking at that summer next year as a great missed opportunity, and then the questions will start quite quickly. That's the nature of the business. So they'll have a go. I mean, again, Slovakia are at a very similar pitch to Ireland. We haven't talked too much about them, but you've watched them a little bit. They can keep possession for sure. But even we heard our friend Lubo Mravčić earlier, it's not like they're looking at this game thinking they're, you know, massive favourites either.
No, I watched a bit of them last month, but it was almost irrelevant because they were missing so many players. So more so going, like, that was the problem with it, really. So more so going off sort of historical reports of their games. They finished third in their group, just like Ireland did last year. I think the goal difference was identical. They were in a group at Wales. Like, it could have swung a couple of directions, certainly key games. So, like, everyone, like, the whole concept of this is that you're in a playoff arising from your Nations League ranking. So, by rights, teams should all be of a similar-ish level to each other. So, in a 90-minute game with home advantage taken out of the equation, in the sense, not taken out of the equation, but certainly dented by the fact that no fans will be there, you've every reason to believe this should be really tight, you know, and this one could very reasonably go all the way. You are right, like, there's a win-or-lose outcome to this. I mean, last month, you know, I thought there was some sort of hysterical reaction to Kenny's first couple of games. But that's probably built out of the expectation that's been built up around it, probably by people in the media speaking about it, but maybe even some of his words himself. Now, I think most people rationally know that this is going to take a bit of time. So when you slap in a game so early into it with a very hard, you know, with a very sort of unforgiving outcome, you have to expect that there'll either be like positive hysteria or like just an over the top reaction, depending on what happens. So I don't know whether to dread that a bit or just sort of, you know, relish the fact that the discourse around the international team was as strong as it ever is. And I suspect there'll be a strong reaction either way. But it does seem like they're not going to just like go back to basics for the game. Or you know, I think Kenny's quite clear in why he's saying that this has to be part of a evolution process. I don't think they're going to go backwards and go, those games were nice last month in terms of tried to do something, but now let's, you know, get bodies behind the ball and get up for set pieces. I don't think it's going to be like that. They're going to try and win it his way, and we'll see if that way is enough.
We sure will. Loads at stake. Dan McDonald, Irish Independent. Thanks so much, Dan. Cheers.
Thanks, Joe.
With guilt like your eyes.